It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dr. John Duffy. John comes by every other week, and we talk about matters of the mind. John, Wendy and I were discussing something.
Manners of the mind.
Very impressive, Bill. I like that, too. Thank you.
Wendy and I were discussing something on Monday, and I said, this is something we must discuss with John. This is so his territory. Here's what it is. There was a survey done by a company called YouGov. They talked to 1,254 adults aged 18 and up.
Okay.
Their focus was on millennials, and the questions were about friendships. They found, I'm going to give you two statistics. The first, upsetting. The second, extremely upsetting.
Okay.
They found that 29%, just under 30%, 29.8%, said that they didn't have a best friend. People in that age bracket, age 23 to 38, just did not have a best friend.
Right.
The more alarming part of the survey is that 22% said no friends at all. They didn't have a single friend in the world. That's more than one in five millennials. How in the world can that be?
Okay, so I hate to say that that reflects the population I work with really, really well.
Yeah.
That feels about right to me. I've been doing this for a quarter century. When I started, that wasn't the case. That idea of having close friends has diminished over time, and more people feel alone and isolated at those ages. I think a lot of it has to do with the idea that they are alone an awful lot of the time. A lot of it also has to do with kind of a relative idea that other people are having fun. And I have evidence on Snapchat, on Instagram.
FOMO.
It perpetrates that myth, doesn't it?
Truly. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
So even if, right, so that fear of missing out. So even if you feel like, well, I did something last night, but other people did a better thing.
Yeah.
So that doesn't count. And the people I was with aren't really close. I don't even know if they really like me. I think that might have been charity that they invited me along. So this kind of pairs with a sense of low self-esteem, too, because there might be people around you who really value your friendship. But if you don't feel that, if you don't feel like you're worthy of that,
right,
then you're going to assume they really don't want me around. They're just, you know, their parents pushed them into this, or they decided collectively, let's throw them a bone and invite them along.
Can I tell you something I've noticed? And I don't know if I'm on track or completely off the rails on this one. When I was in high school, there obviously wasn't Snapchat or social media, and we had fun together, but we also had heart-to-hearts, like, oh, a boyfriend broke up with me, I need to talk to you. Now, the communication between kids are more of, here's a funny meme, or here's a funny joke. It's like they don't open up to each other as much as we did.
It's true, unless there is something urgent going on. So this is troubling too, because in the middle of the night, if a kid is having a hard time, if a kid feels suicidal, they're not going and waking up their parents, they're not going to the ER, they're not calling 911, they're texting a friend, or they're, you know, Snapchatting a friend. And so, you know, 14-year-olds are responsible for the lives of other 14-year-olds.
That's too much responsibility.
Way too much responsibility. No kid can be responsible for that. And yet, it gives them this sense of purpose, you know what I mean? And it makes them feel good to be able to help their friends too. But so it's hard to talk them down from feeling that sense of responsibility regardless.
Because do you think this will change? Do you think, like, listening to the statistics Bill just talked about, it seems like this is the way it's going to go from now on?
It's definitely, things are still trending in that direction. I've worked with a lot of kids who go out of their way to post things online that suggest, like, hey, you can always reach out to me, you're never alone. So there is this little bit of groundswell, but it's new, of kids trying to reach out to that lonely kid who feels like he or she has no friends. So there's some of that happening, but the statistic still stands. I suspect we're getting worse before we get better.
Isn't that scary?
Yes.
But at a time when suicide rates are so high, and just the mere fact that human content is going down, in the old days when you can just physically talk to somebody, and now those days, instead of talking to somebody, it's a quick text and that's it. That's not the contact that we're used to and we need.
No, and even if kids grew up with social media and they don't know any different, which most kids right now, younger kids, they don't know. They don't remember what it was like before an iPhone. That idea that they need actual contact with people is a little lost on them. So they feel like, oh, my way of connecting with people is through my phone.
Right.
That's why they're so desperate to hold on to it at night when they go to sleep, and in the morning when they first wake up, and during the school day, because they feel like, oh, I'm going to miss something really crucial here. That FOMO is going to hit me hard if I can't be in touch with people right now.
so many times when we have a tragedy like we've had in the last couple of days, as they're profiling the person or people who did it, you hear the word loner. This is somebody that really didn't have much interaction with other people. It ties into this.
I'm afraid it does. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not... I don't think it's the sole and direct and only cause of it, but do I think it's a variable in this?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, I think there is kind of this crisis of disconnection in our culture overall that we really need to address broadly. So we need to create circumstances where our millennials, where our kids have more face-to-face contact. That's why I'm kind of, I didn't used to be a stickler for joining something, being a part of something where other people are involved on a regular basis, but now kids need that so badly because that just that texting contact is too remote to feel intimate enough to feel like you really belong.
What do you recommend to parents who see this in their own kids where you just go, oh, I have a son or a daughter who's just not interacting with anybody. What's your next step?
Yeah, so I'll tell you what I ask them not to do is to try to talk their kids out of it. So a lot of parents will say, oh, you're so bright and you're funny and good looking and witty. And so there's no reason for you to feel this way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of dismissive in saying, you can't really talk to me about it. I can't handle your pain. So I think it's important that parents acknowledge, yeah, this has got to be really hard for you. And brainstorm with their kid. Like, you know, so what can we do together? What can we figure out to get you more involved, to get you more connected with people? And what do you think's in the way? Mm-hmm. And kids are really like forthcoming about this stuff and really helpful in brainstorming and problem solving their way through this. So that's what I recommend more than anything else. And usually it involves becoming a part of something else bigger than yourself.
It's funny because if I say that to my kids, like, you know, you've got everything going for you. You're funny. You're good looking. You have to say that you're my mom.
Right, like, of course.
They don't take it from, it doesn't mean anything coming from us.
That's the other piece of it, right? You know, like that's the parent card.
Right.
We have to be that way. Right.
My mom never said any of that good stuff to me. I wish I was craving it, and I say it too much probably.
But my heart so goes out to these people. Again, the bracket ages were 23 to 38 saying at 22%, we don't have any friends. You think that would be the time in life that you tend to have the most friends.
Right.
It would almost make sense that way.
Absolutely.
It's just a horrible number.
Yeah, and I think part of it is perception. Part of it is like that low self-esteem will color your perception of whether you're connected and whether you have friends or not. And part of it is isolation. You know, if you believe, it's kind of a confirmation bias kind of thing, where if you believe that nobody's going to be drawn to you, you're going to withdraw. You're going to want you. So even if you've got the apartment in Lincoln Park and you've got bars that are accessible and you've got, you know, dating apps and things like that, you will pull away from all of that stuff if you feel unworthy of it.
Someone has just texted in, exactly, I'm in the insurance business and I have to meet with people of all ages face to face. Most of the millennials out there can't even have a reasonable conversation. How can you be friends with somebody who you can't even talk with? And that's not a slam on the millennials, but they've been part of their phone so long that the face to face communication is lacking.
Definitely. And in favor of the millennials, they crave that. They want that. They want to connect with one another. You know, it's just, I think that we don't have the venues for it. And again, I don't think that self-worth piece is present in enough of these young people to get there.
John, the other day, I also said the word friends means something different than it used to mean because of Facebook. A friend now is somebody that you may have never met ever. They're just on your Facebook page. But try borrowing money for them or asking them to drive you to the airport. They're not going to be a true friend.
It's so true. I mean, it's kind of like standing on an empty box, right? You know, so you get this idea that, wow, I've accumulated thousands of friends on Facebook. But you're right. Nobody would drive you to the airport.
Right.
Nobody would be there for you in the middle of the night. So it's a false sense of self-worth. And young people from, you know, teenagers all the way up to the 30s, as you're talking about, Bill, are well aware that they're kind of kidding themselves.
Yeah.
I've had kids tell me that directly, but they're like, I'll take this, you know, thin facsimile of reality over feeling nothing, over feeling no connection whatsoever to anybody.
John Duffy is with us today. He is back from a vacation, and you went to another country. And I have some questions for you about how things are in other countries. Can we chat about that when
we
come back?
I would love
that. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Dr. John Duffy, our show psychologist, is in the studio. Now, I noticed that you traveled afar.
Yes.
You were in another country, and I was thinking about it. Other countries, and the one you went to, they have video games.
Mm-hmm.
They have mental illness.
Yep.
I don't think there are many shootings where you were. And what's the political atmosphere like? Do people fight each other and are scared to say anything? Where were you, first
of
all?
So we went to Switzerland, and we were pretty much all over. Switzerland's a small country, so in about 8 days, we were able to travel kind of throughout the country, from the rural parts to, you know, Zurich, and it was, first of all, a beautiful country. The political atmosphere, curiously, I couldn't tell you much about, because, and this is the truth, because it just wasn't a topic of much discussion. People weren't talking about politics. And last Thursday happened to be this big national holiday. And so we went to see the fireworks and people were gathered around. But in terms of people wearing a political agenda, either on their sleeve, out loud, if I'm being really frank with you guys, the only people I heard mention politics were tourists who were American.
You know, I will tell you this. I never liked talking about politics, and it wasn't part of everybody's everyday speech many, many years ago.
Right.
It wasn't. It was like you didn't say who you voted for. If someone else had a different point of view, you'd go, oh, that's interesting.
Right.
But now you can't do that. I mean, there are so many times I bite my tongue. There are so many times I break my fingers so I don't post something on Facebook. It's like it's so mean. And what's the deal?
So I read a book recently about the psychology of politics and how it's changed over the decades. And in the last 15 years or so, and a lot of it started with Obama's run for office, in that he recognized, oh, there is political power online. So, you know, social media is where I can gain some clout and some leverage.
First Twitter president.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Right?
Obama.
So, right. So, ever since then, politics has become kind of like this insidious part of our moment-to-moment discourse, because the president right now, if he tweeted, you know, in 15 minutes, it would show up on one of the major news channels on average within five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tweet itself. And so, you know, politicians, and this one in particular, can drive the news cycle and get us all talking about one agenda. So there's a cleverness to it, because
right.
as opposed to whatever anybody's planning in terms of production on news channels, on radio stations and things like that, a single tweet, you know, something you just send from your phone
right.
can control the entire cycle.
Right.
That's an awful lot of political power, more so than was available, that existed 20 years ago.
Right.
I didn't think of it that way, and now I see why Donald Trump tweets all the time.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a power in that.
I'm going to start doing that, and no one will talk about it.
That's
interesting.
Boy! Do you think in a place like Switzerland, and to be fair, there are parts of the world where political discussion, I know in England, for instance, with a new prime minister and with what they're going through with Brexit,
sure.
it'd be very hard to get through a day where people aren't talking about politics.
No doubt.
But do you think in a place like Switzerland, it's a conscious effort? They're saying internally, let's just keep this to ourselves. It's better to live life without that discussion. What do you think is going on there?
100%. I think that is, it feels like a very conscious decision.
Yeah.
And they've got more time than we do in a lot of ways. They take a siesta in the middle of the day. They stand and talk in the streets with one another.
Yeah.
But very few of them are looking at their phones to see what's going on right now. They're looking at each other face to face. And normally the discussions I heard were about, like, what's going on in the neighborhood? What's going on with the weather? And these are locals. These are people who live in Switzerland.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like I was getting some kind of you know, narrow definition of what was going on there.
Yeah.
It felt pretty broad, and it felt like it kind of crossed the country, that people were not talking about politics and weren't necessarily talking a lot about current events, you know, unless it was something pointed. They were just talking to each other.
But John, they have the internet there.
Yep.
So if they're exposed to the internet at any length during a day, how are they not processing that information and either agreeing or disagreeing with it with people around them?
I'll be honest. I think they choose what to attend to and what to ignore, at least by and large. You know, I won't say that there's never, ever a political discussion in Switzerland. Certainly there is, but it's not constant. You know, it's something they talk about maybe periodically.
Sure.
I think we tend to be a little more reactive. So if something is going on, if we get a pop-up notification, you know, we're going to like want to talk about that right here, right now, because this feels of the moment and alarming.
Yeah.
Whereas there, very little feels of the moment and alarming. They operate at a slower pace, and they're a little more thoughtful.
Yep.
And
the Swiss Miss Instant Cocoa is fresh, it's good.
So fresh.
So good.
Yeah, right. No travel time.
Welcome back. How can listeners reach you if they want to talk to you? And you also have a new book coming out. We're out of time because we have White Sox baseball coming up.
Yeah.
But we'll get you back on to talk about that. That's this month, right?
Excellent. That's it's September 15th.
Okay. And where do people reach you?
DrJohnDuffy.com. The book is Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety.
Better get that title down.
I know, right?
Next time we ask you.